We're here on Daf Mem Vav Amid Aleph, four lines up from the bottom, Toshma, and we're trying to prove that Madbea Nasa Chalipin. And this is going to be a proof based on Kiddushin, a Mishnah Kiddushin on Daf Chaf Ches Amid Aleph. The Mishnah says, Kol Hanase Domim Bi Acher, Kevin Shezoche Zeh, Nischayev Zeh B'Chalipin. Now, the Gemara is going to explain the language of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, quote, Kol hanase domim li'acher, end of quote. My nihu. The Gemara says, what is this referring to? And the answer is, matbea. Matbea is something, a currency that you give for payment for something, something else. Domi means payment. Bi'acher is for the purchase of something else. And the Mishnah says about domim, which is matbea, is kevin shezocha zen ischayev zeh b'chalifin, which means that if the owner of the matbea gives the matbea as chalifin in order to acquire from the mocher a shor or a para or anything of that sort, is once the Bala Pora makes a Mashicha on this Matbea, then the recipient will now have been Kona this Pora, and therefore, if the Bala Matbea now suffers a loss of the Pora, meaning the Pora gets killed by some onus, that's his loss, because once he's given the Matbea over to the Bala Pora, the Bala Matbea, made a kinyan on the Pora. The Pora is his, and whatever happens, he suffers that loss. Even though he never made a Mashicha on the Pora, but it doesn't matter. The Pora is acquired, is Knuyalo, by virtue of the Chalipin, when he gave the Matbea over to the Bala Pora, to the Makna. And again, the way we've structured it, the chalipin is bekelov shel lokeach. We're going to see later on that that itself is a machlokas. So the Gemara says, "Ushmamina matbea nasa chalipin." From this, we can derive a kinyan chalipin through a matbea. Rabbi Yehuda, hachi kamar. And here we're going to turn to Daf Memvav Amid Beis. Rabbi Yehuda is going to reinterpret this Mishnah Kiddushin. Kol hanishom domim bi'acher. Something which we usually evaluate, in other words, we know that it has a certain definite market value when it's given as payment for something else, which is a reference to any metaltel, any movable objects, even fruits, even peros. They were given over to the mocher as chalipin, and all, any of these objects are a substitute for what we call sudar, for the kinyan sudar, which is a classical case of a sudar, of a kinyan chalipin, of a kerchief. And kevin shezocha zeh, once the mocher receives this object, or this fruit, whatever it might be, metaltelin or peros, is nischayev zeh b'chalipin, then the lokeach acquires ownership in whatever is being sold to him, such that that object, even though he never made a Mashicha on it, he's kone the object, and therefore, if it's destroyed, be honest, that's lokeach's loss. So that we see in this interpretation of Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah is not talking about Matbea. Matbea is not the medium of chalipin to substitute or replace a suda, but rather we're talking about dovra nisham. Dovra nisham means metaltelin, it means peros. Hachinam mistavra, the Gemara wants to bring a diuk in this Mishnah to support this interpretation of Yehuda. Midiktani seifa, the Mishnah says in the very same Mishnah, but in the seifa it says ketzad. What's the case of hanisham bedomim bi'acher? It is hamachlif or hechlif shor bipara o chamar bishor. They made a barter exchange swapping a shor for a chamor, or a shor for a para. So we're not, obviously not talking about a matbea. Shmami, no, we must be talking about davran nisham damin, which means metaltalin. The Gemara now wants to understand what was the havavina. How do we ever understand that this Mishnah was referring to matbea when the Bryce, when the Mishnah itself in the Sefer says Ketzad Hechlif Shar Bepara? Obviously, we're not talking about matbea. That's explicit. Ulamai desalke daiti meikar lematbea. If there was a real serious havamina when the Gemara originally quoted this Toshma that the Mishnah is referring to matbea, my Ketzad. What does the Mishnah say? Ketzad, it goes on to explain the Reisha as referring to Hichlif Shar Bipara. And the Gemara answers, what was the Havamina? Hachi Kamar. This was the intention of the Mishnah after the Mishnah was Machadish already in the Reisha that a Matbea can be used as a substitute for a kerchief as a Chalipin. The Mishnah now goes on to explain what really Kinyan Chalipin is all about. And that is Uperi Nami Avdi Chalipin. And to tell us that not only is a matbea a valid method of Chalipin, but even Peri is also a valid method of Chalipin. Ketzad Hichlif Shar Bepara O Chamar Bepara. That not only is matbea chalipin, but even peros could serve as chalipin. So this is the way we interpret the brayso. The mishnah. Kol hanase domin biacher, which means matbea. If he gives it as chalipin as a replacement for sudar, is kevin shezoch hazeh. Once the mocher made an acquisition over the matbea. Nischayev Zeh, the Kona will be now henceforth Chayev in Onsim, because he made a Kinyan on that object that's being sold to him. And even if he didn't make a Mashicha, and then the next part of the Mishnah says, what is Kinyan Chalipin? What is the essence of Kinyan Chalipin? Kigon, for example, Hamachlif Shar Bepar, Hamar Beshar. And the Mishnah quotes this case in order to teach me, Derech Agav, that Peros Osim Chalifin. So there are two Chidushim in this Mishnah that are interrelated. And that is, number one, Matbea Nasa Chalifin. Number two, Peros Nasa Chalifin. The Ritva adds that the intention of the Tanna was to tell us that just like a Matbea Nasa Chalifin, and we're not afraid of the fact that the currency might be disqualified and taken out of currency, out of tender, so too Paris can be used for Chalipin. And we're not afraid that Paris will spoil in the future. And it's not similar to the paradigm of Naal, which is in the parish of Chalipin in Rus. In both cases, right now the object is alive and well, it exists, it's not spoiled. It's not out of currency, it's valid, and therefore it works as a bimkom sudar to effectuate a Kenyan chalipin. It comes out that according to this sugya, whether we take the svar of the Makshan or we take the explanation of Rabbi Yehuda, the sefer of this mission is telling us that peros osa chalipin. And there's no machlokas about that. The only issue is whether the Reisha was Machadesh, the din of Peres Osa Chalipin, or Matbea Osa Chalipin. But everybody agrees that Peres Osa Chalipin, either it's the Reisha or the Seifa. Ha Nicha L'Rav Sheshes. This is Rav Sheshes' Shita that we'll get to a little bit later on. The Omar, he says that when the Pasuk says, Na'al, it also includes L'Kayim called Dovar as a special Ribui, to teach us that Peri Avdi Chalipin, that not only is a Kli effective as a medium of Chalipin, but even a Peri is effective as a medium of Chalipin. El Rav Nachman Di Omar, Kli in Aval Peri Lo Avdi Chalipin, my ketzad. How does Rav Nachman, who maintains that a kli, and exclusively a kli, can be valid as a medium of chalipin, but not peri? He understands literally na'al is a reference to kalim, but to the exclusion of peros. And yet here in this Mishnah, ketzad, we're talking about hamachlif shor bepora. Clearly that's a case of peri, it's not a case of a kli. The Gemara explains now how to interpret this Mishnah according to Rav Nachman. Hachi kamar. This is what the Rashi and the Sefer, the Mishnah, refer. Even though metaltalin, ein metaltalin niknin v'kinyin kesef below mashicha, however, there is a way in which you could be makna metaltalin without mashicha. Yesh domim shehen kechalipin. There's a situation in which you pay as domim. Again, it's not a symbolic kinyan chlipin like the case of a sudar, but the object itself is a bimkom. It's a replacement of domim, of payment. And once that object is given as domim, it can effectuate a kinyan kesef as domim, even though again it's a tangible object, but it has a value, and you can give it as a medium of payment. So you're giving an object instead of giving currency, cash, as a medium of payment. You're giving an object as a medium of payment, a chefetz, and by giving that chefetz as a medium of kinyan, the kinyan is chal in a way that you don't need mashicha on the other object. In other words, logically, we would think that the only kinyan that you can effectuate where someone could acquire ownership, and ownership can be transferred to someone on metaltalin in such a way that there's no mashicha done on this metaltalin, is chalipin. Well, that's not going to work according to Rav Nachman, because he limits chalipin to kalim, and here we're not talking about kalim, we're talking about peri in this Mishnah of Hichlif Shor Bepara. So the Mishnah now is going to explain Yesh Domim Shehen Kechalipin, that there's going to be a case where an object, metaltalin, that's Gufa Momon, it has a status and a power to effectuate a kinyan as Domim. But just like chalipin, you can obviate, you can circumvent the need for a maisa mashicha on the metaltalin. How can you avoid mashicha on a metaltalin? The law is ein metaltalin niknin bekesef. You always have to have mashicha. So if the answer would have been chalipin, that's fine. Here we're coming up with a structure, a method that works, operates like chalipin. Ketzad, how can you have such a thing? So again, we're talking about Reuven, who's selling his shor to Shimon, and Shimon is acquiring ownership on Reuven's shor, agrees to pay a certain value, but instead of paying that value in cold cash and currency, what they're going to have an agreement there between Reuven and Shimon, that let's say instead of Shimon paying, let's say, 200 for the shor that he's purchasing from Reuven. So again, Reuven owns the shor, if we have the case. And Reuven wants Shimon, who's acquiring the shor, to pay him 200. But instead of paying him 200, hichlif dmei shor bepara. Shimon says, look, I don't have 200 here to pay you for the shor, but I do have a para, and my cow is worth 200. So the kona, who's trying to acquire ownership over the shor that's being transferred to him, offers, instead of paying the dmei shor that they agreed upon, he offered to give him a para qua, or in lieu of that exact sum of dmei para. So if we say that Reuven owns the shor, and now Shimon, who wants to acquire ownership on the shor, makes a kinyan, makes a meshicha on the shor, at this point Shimon owes Reuven 200 for his shor. That was the agreed price. And now, once Shimon acquired ownership on the shor, and there's a chov, there's an obligation on Shimon the Kone to pay up to 200 for the shor, he suggests, he bargains with the mocher, with the seller of the shor, that instead of paying the 200, which is the demay shor that they agreed upon, and he's obligated to pay, there was a joint mutual agreement between Reuven, the seller of the shor, and Shimon, the buyer of the shor, that Shimon owns a para, and that para should be paid as dmei hashor. In such a case, once that agreement was reciprocally accepted, it's binding, and even though no kinyan meshich was made on the para of Shimon, the para of Shimon is sitting in the backyard, in the corral, on the farm of Shimon, and Reuven never actually made a kinyan meshicha on that para. Nevertheless, since the para now serves as dmei hashor, we're looking at the para not in terms of an object so much, but in terms of the value that this object is worth. In a sense, we're stripping it of its concrete, essence, substituting its abstract value. Now, with the Mashicha of the Shor, when Shimon makes a Mashicha on the Shor, he now acquires ownership on, I'm sorry, he now transfers ownership on the Para, and Reuven, the owner of the Shor, now becomes the proud owner of the Para. And in effect, it's like Chalipin, the dmei ashor, meaning the money, the value of 200, which Shimon owes Reuven for the shor, those damim now serve as a kinyan on Shimon's para to transfer it over to Reuven. So Reuven, the mocher of the shor, acquires ownership on Shimon the Kone's para through the dmei ashor. The dmei ashor effectuate a kinyan on behalf of Reuven on the para of Shimon. Do you have that? Again, I'll say that one more time because it's a little bit abstract. There's dmei ashor. It means that Shimon is making a kinyan meshicha on the shor of Reuven that's being sold to him. And that acquisition on the part of Shimon, the kone, of the shor of the mocher, effectuates a chov, an obligation for Shimon the kone to pay dmei ashor, whatever the value of the shor that they agreed upon with. Let's say the mocher demanded 200 for his shor. Now that Shimon has made it a meshicha on Reuven's shor, Shimon now owes Reuven 200, and that's called dmei hashor. And instead of that, now another stage of the agreement enters center stage. Instead of Shimon actually writing a check for 200, Reuven agrees to Shimon's offer to transfer the para of Shimon over to Reuven. And now, since the para of Shimon is serving as dmei shor, that's why the kinyan of Shimon on the shor of Reuven effectuates a kinyan on Reuven's behalf on the para of Shimon, which is being classified and defined now as dmei ashor. Once the kinyan of Shimon, meaning the kone, is effectuated, is validated and binding on the shor of Reuven the mocher, automatically Reuven becomes the owner acquiring the parah of Shimon as Dmei Shor. This is the way Rashi interprets the Gemara, and that's what Hichlif Shor means. A Shor was in a sense being transferred, and it's considered like Peros, not like a Kli. In other words, it's not that Shimon when he makes a Meshicha on the Shor of Reuven, it's not like that's a Kinyan. That's a Kenyan Chalipin, because again we're holding now that, like Rav Nachman, that a Kenyan Chalipin requires a Kli and not Peros, not other Metaltalin. So the language of the Tana called Anisham Domin Bi Acher means any Metaltalin that is evaluated by his friend who's selling that Metaltalin, like for example a Shor, at such a value, and then the mocher receives that payment, and after the kinyan is made, in lieu of that payment, another object is given as damim, as payment. So the lokeach is offering damim to the mocher, but instead of damim, he's offering him a certain object. The mocher now makes a kinyan on the object of the kone, of the lokeach, as domim for the object that was evaluated, meaning the object that he's selling to the lokeach. And once the mocher, I should start with the kone, once the kone makes his kinyan on the metalton that's being sold to him by the mocher, then the mocher now makes a kinyan on the metalton of the lokeach that are being transferred over by virtue of this reciprocal agreement as dmei achefetz, as a dovra nishom bi acher. And that's the language of the Tana when he says kol anishom bi acher is kevin shezocha zed nischayv zed b'chalifim keitzad, and it says hichlif shor b'para. Now Rashi at the beginning of this Dibra Maskil Ketzad seems to indicate that we're talking about that after Shimon became Chayev in Mos in the 200 by virtue of the Meshicha that he made on the Shor of Reuven the Mocher, now the Mocher wants to in a sense be Kone the Chov on an object. Correct? And that object becomes a chalifin for the dmei ashar in this case, and yet those words of Rashi seem lechora to contradict what he said before, that the Tanan Kol Anishom was talking about the lokeach who is zocha in the metaltalin of the mocher. And then the sheni, the mocher, was kona the chefetz of the lokeach, and if he becomes chayv in the onsim of this object of the parah of Shimon, Rashi seems to indicate now that both are kona together simultaneously. Not like he seems to indicate at the beginning that there was a two stage process, time T1 and time T2. Rashi at the beginning of his presentation seems to assume that after Shimon became chayev in the Mos by virtue of the Meshicha that he made on the Shor of Reuven, then the Mocher decides to accept the Shor as payment for that Chov. That seems to be different than what Rashi says behemshech advarim, that both kinyonim achal simultaneously. In any event, Tosfos here, Dibra Maskil Yesh, is of the opinion that we're not talking about a case of being Makne Mos, that is Chayev, right? Because the Lokeach, Shimon, now is obligated to pay up Mos to Reuven in lieu of the fact that he makes a Kinyan on Reuven's Shor. but rather that the kinyan is effectuated by hanas mechilas milva. If you take a look in Tosis, he says, just the last line in the Tosis says, Kanav hanas mechilas milva, and he quotes a sugya in Kedusha Davavim in Beis of Arvich Lazimna or Adaber Eloch Lashilton. And that means that you can be machnas something as a kinyan with a hanah. Hanah is also called Shavu Kesef. In this case, hanah is Mechilas Milva. And basically, Reuven, the seller of the shor, says to Shimon, even though you owe me the 200 for my shor, which you were kone, I am going to wipe off that chiyuv to pay damim, and that's giving you a new hanah of Mechilas Milva. And through that hanah that you're receiving, you're machnami, you're para. That's the way Tosa seems to interpret it. In any event, the Dmei Ashar, which are the monies that have to be paid by Shimon for acquiring the Shar of Reuven, now are effective to be kone the para, meaning to transfer ownership of the para from Shimon to Reuven the Mocher. And Reuven never made a Mashicha on the para of Shimon. And that's the chiddush here of this Mishnah, which works out according to Rav Nachman, that here's a case of a kinyan domim in which there is no necessity of a Mashicha, which means it fits into the classical pattern of a kinyan chalipin, even though Rav Nachman says metaltalin cannot serve as kinyan chalipin, no peri, you need kli, and in effect, since the dmei hapara function as almost like mos, correct? But instead of mos, he's giving him metaltalin, he's giving him a para. That domim is going to effectuate a kinyan on the parah without the mocher, without Reuven actually making a kinyan meshicha on the parah. So that's the chiddush of this Mishnah of machlif dmei shor b'parah. It's a kinyan kesef because we're dealing with the parah, not as a sudar. It's not a replacement for sudar, that it can't function as according to Rav Nachman, but rather as payment for the shor, and it's like mos, and yet it effectuates a kinyan in a magical way without having the mocher who's acquiring this para, meaning Reuven, make an actual maisa mashicha on the para. The Gemara says now, my taima, why does Rav Nachman in this particular case maintain that the domim for the shor, which is basically payment, basically mos, can serve as a kinyan on the para? We have a rule which we learned back on Daf Mem Dalet that matbea eina kona es hametaltalin, that anytime a person acquires ownership of metaltalin, he's got to make a mashicha on that metaltalin, and domin which is paid to him for that metaltalin cannot effectuate that kinyan. So that if this para is serving as a kinyan domin, that a mashiach has to be made. And until such time as Reuven receives that payment, the kinyan is not chal. And the Gemara explains now, the Rav Nachman holds Savaleki Rav Yochanan, the Omar, this is Suyam Mem Zainam, it based Dvar Torah Mos Konos, that the Torah recognizes the validity of a kinyan domim, excuse me, of a kinyan Mos on Metaltal, and there's no need for mashicha. But the requirement of Mashicha Metaltalin to effectuate a kinyan was a rabbinic institution. Why did the Chacham institute that Mashicha Kona, that giving over the money, the payment, is not enough? Correct? So I walk over to the cashier and I give him $20 for whatever object in his store that I want to purchase, that's not kona. I need to be kona through a mashicha on the object that I'm acquiring. The most is not effective to clinch the kinyan. Gzeira shemi yomar lo nisrfu chitecha baliyah. Until such time as the lokeach has received the object is in the house of the mocher, the seller. It hasn't yet been delivered over to the lokeach. And if a fire breaks out, well, according to Torah law, the loss of these fruits in the attic in the storage house of Reuven the mocher is a loss that's suffered by the lokeach, because insofar as he transferred the mos over to the mocher has now successfully transferred the object, the commodity, over to the possession, the ownership of the lokeach. Now the fire breaks out. It's lokeach who's going to cry. He's the one who's going to lose his chitim, his massive, you know, volume of grains. The mocher is not even going to bother, you know, doing any great effort to save the chitim that are going up in smoke, because he's not going to lose anything. He's already gotten paid, and the lokeach is the owner of these chitim. Now, we have a rule that when the Rabbanim make an institution, a gzera, that only applies if the scenario is commonplace. The Gemara says, "Umilsa de shchicha gazur bei Rabbanan, but milsa lo shchicha lo gazur bei Rabbanan." It's very unusual, this scenario, in which a person comes to buy metaltalin, and instead of giving damim, instead of giving actual mos and currency, he gives other metaltalin as dmei. As we said before, the dmei shor are now effectuated by the para that he's transferring. Is that a milsa lo shchicha and lo gazur bei Rabbanan? And that's why Reuven can now acquire ownership on the part of Shimon without having to make a kinyan on Shimon's para. And the answer is because this is a kind of a payment which is a payment of damim, because as we said before, the para is dmei shor, and the kinyan is effectuated even without a mashicha on the para. We always need a mashicha on metaltalin. The answer is that's only gzeirat rabbanon, and it applies in a milsa d'shchicha, not in a milsa lo shchicha. Now the Gemara goes over to Reish Lakish's part, in Reish Lakish's turf. Reish Lakish on Mem Zayin is going to maintain that mashicha mefureshes min haTorah, that a kinyan mashicha is required by the Torah. The Torah never ever recognized the power of Moses to be kona metaltalin without a mashicha. And according to Reish Lakish, there's no difference now between milsa d'shchicha and milsa lo shchicha. We're talking about the disqualification and the invalid power, or I should say the other way around, that Moses is invalid according to the Torah law as the power to effectuate a kinyan. So then we need mashicha, and we're going to need mashicha as a universal absolute rule, whether it's milsa d'shchicha or milsa lo shchicha. And the answer is that we're going to have to link up Reish Lakish then with Rav Sheshes, who's of the opinion that Peros can effectuate a chlipin. Hanicha e Savar, meaning e Reish Lakish Savar, la ki Rav Sheshes, that Peros can effectuate a chlipin as a substitute for a kli, for a nal, for a sudar, is Mitaris Lakir Rav Sheshes. Now we're going to go back to the Mishnah and interpret it the way we saw in Rabbi Yehuda interpreted, that kol anisho bedamin bi'acher, we're talking about metaltalin, or peros, or whatever it is that a person evaluates before he sells it. Now, konim b'chalipin, now these peros can serve as a kinyan chalipin, which means that the shor of Reuven, the seller, upon which Shimon has made a kinyan mashicha, that mashicha is a chalipin on the para of Shimon, meaning through the Shar of Reuven. Reuven now has acquired ownership. Once that Shar was given by Reuven to Shimon, Shimon has now acquired ownership on the para of Shimon by virtue of Kinyan Chalipin. And that's what we're going to interpret this Mishnah. Ela'i Savalok Rav Nachman, the Omer Peri, lo avdi Chalipin, umad be'elo kani, hechi mitaritzla. So Gemara says, how will Reish Lakish interpret this Mishnah if he indeed holds like Rav Nachman that Peri lo avdi Chalipin? And now we're holding, according to Reish Lakish, that Mashicha is the absolute requirement of Kinyan Metaltalin, and the Torah never recognized a Kinyan Metaltalin. Through Mos, through Damim in this case, Al Karchok, the Gemara answers, Kirav Sheshes Metaritzla, we have no choice. In other words, we're boxed into a position which we cannot match Reish Lakish with Rav Nachman, who maintains that Peri lo avdi chalipin. We have to match Reish Lakish with Rav Sheshes, that Peri is also chalipin. That's the only way we can get away with interpreting this Mishnah. Fine, at this point the Gemara goes back to chalipin b'matbea. We had on Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph a list of Amoraim who hold ein matbea nasa chalipin. That matbea itself cannot effectuate a kinyan chalipin, and that's what we proved from the Mishnah, that ein matbea nikne b'chalipin. And the Gemara now asks a kasha tnan. In our Mishnah it says kol avetaltalin konim ze et ze. The Omar Reish Lakish afilu kis moli mos b'kis moli mos. Right, you can transfer a pocketbook full of coins with a pocketbook full of coins for a pocketbook full of coins, and that means that according to Reish Lakish, there's a kinyan himkonim zed, and that's a kinyan chalipin. And now we have a problem because Mos cannot effectuate a kinyan on metaltalin, and therefore the only way of understanding Reish Lakish is called metaltalin konim zed is through chalipin. Then it turns out that matbea nasa chalipin, and they're also nigdem a chalipin, but both at the same time. So kolam etalton konin zedzeh means that in the case of Reish Lakish's interpretation of kis moli mos b'kis moli mos, we're assuming now the mos, not the kis, that the mos themselves effectuate a kinyan chalipin. So if I want to, for example, purchase from you gold coins, and you want to purchase from me a larger amount of silver coins, once you receive the gold from me, I now am the proud owner of your silver coins, wherever they are, through Kenyan Chalipin. So you see that Matbea Nasa Chalipin. The Gemara answers, Tirgumah Rav Acha. Rav Acha says that when Reish Lakish was speaking about Kis Mali Mos, B'Kis Mali Mos, he wasn't talking about Mos that are classified and defined as matbea, as tiva, as matbea, but rather sometimes matbea serves as metaltalin. Now, what's the case where Mos would be metaltalin? Bindinar anka vanigra. There are two cases in which matbea is taken out of currency. One is called anka, which means, as the Gemara says in the next line, echad shepsalatu malchus, the government that issued and minted this coin decides that, you know, that legally it's no longer binding. You know, there was an old, you know, the previous king's image was on this coin. From now on, this is not legal tender. Now, even though the government made that decree, the people, at least secretly, are still using that coin, as we'll soon see, as currency. And they're paying with it. That's called Ankara, which is Psalato Malchus. Then we have something called Anigra. Anigra is Echad She Psalato Medina. And that means that even though legally it is tender, Because the Melech did not decree that it cannot be used. But for some reason, the people in that country decide, we don't like this matbea. And they accepted upon themselves that we're not going to use in our country that matbea. Don't even think of it. This all has to do with politics. But be that as it may, in this case of Anigra, other countries will use it because it does, it has, you know, the, it has the legal status of tender, of being valid, and therefore in other countries where they don't have this political uprising against the king, they will recognize that matbea. But in any event, according to Reish Lakish, whether it's Ankara, whether it's Anigra, and we'll see why we need both cases in a second, but it is taking the matbea, being mafkiyat status as a matbea, and therefore, by virtue of the fact that these are no longer in use, the psulim, they forfeit their status as a matbea, they become like metaltalin, which are nasim chalipin and niknim b'chalipin. They are subject to a kinyan chalipin, and they can serve as a kinyan chalipin. The Gemara says, Utsrichu, we need both cases of Ankara and Anigra. Diash me'inon, if we only had the case of Anka, which is Psalato, Psalatu Malchus, we would say Mishum Delosagi Klal, because it has no legal representation, it has no legal status as legal tender in any country on the face of the earth. Aval Psalatu Medina, the Sagle Medina Achriti, but in the case of Anigra, where the people locally in this country did not accept it, but in other countries it's legal tender, is Ema Akati Matbea, who it would have the status nevertheless of Matbea, because although people aren't using it here, it has legal status elsewhere in another Medina, and Ein Matbea Niknem Achalipin, and therefore if the Kenyan was made on Ankara as a chalipin, it would not be effective on Anigra, because Anigra still has the status of matbea so far as its legal tender elsewhere in the world. The Iash Marinan Psalatu Medina, if you had mentioned the case of Anigra where people despise using this coin locally for political reasons, and therefore it loses its shame matbea, But now it has the status of peros, and if it could serve as a substitute for a suda to effectuate a kinyan chalipin, because mishum delo sagile, why is it no longer a matbea in this case of Anigra? Because no one here locally is willing to take it. It's an act of, you know, anti the revolution, so to speak, and lo betzin and lo farhesia. People despise it so that even in private they won't accept it. Therefore, it's pakashem matbea, and now as peri it can serve as a kinyan chalipin. Avol psalatu malchus the sagile betzina ema kati matbea v'ein matbea nikne b'chalipin. So the transfer of ownership on the Ankara would not serve. I'm sorry. The transfer of ownership on the Anigra would not serve as a kinyan on the Anka, because the Anka, which is Psalo Malchus, is accepted here locally and used in the market, but only Bitsina, only privately, and therefore it still has the Shem Matbea and Ein Matbea Niknin Chalipin Sricha, and therefore if Ach has to tell me that in both cases, even in the case of Psalatu Malchus, it's not considered a matbea. Now the Gemara comes to analyze a new din. Omar Abba, Omar Afuna, Bielu Kana, Machar Li Bielu Kana. This is a very interesting case where the Lokeach is holding on to Mos. He's transferring him over to Ruvain the Mocher. And he's saying to Ruvain, accept these mos as payment for your object. And the strange thing is that Ruvain the Mocher has no clue how much mos Shimon the Lokech is giving him. He accepts agrees to accept these mos from the hands of the lokeach, and according to Rav Huna, the lokeach is konen his chefetz through the mos that he gave to the mocher, and that becomes a binding kinyan. No one can back down from this kinyan. And here we're going on to daf mem zayin amud aleph. V'yeshlo olav ona, which is a little bit strange, but the mocher, when he counts out the money, and here he went ahead and he sold his object, and lo and behold, he realizes that he's been underpaid, which means that there was ona, there was fraud, and the most that he was given in this jack in the box is much, let's say it's even a shtus, it's even a sixth less than the value of the object that he's transferring over. He has rights to claim ona, but let's go back to the ratio. What's more important here is the fact that, assuming there's no ona here, the mocher has now transferred ownership over the object to the lokeach, and the lokeach now owns the object, even though the lokeach never made a kinyan on the object. And we have a principle that ein metaltel niknim b'mos ela b'mashicha is kana afal gavdolo moshach. Now, why in this case is this the exception to the rule where mos effectuate a kinyan on metaltelin without a mashicha on the metaltelin? Lokeach never made a mashicha on the metaltelin. Is the keva de lo kapid, because this is a very strange case in which the mocher is not makpid to ask how many mos there are. Is kana, the lokeach makes a kinyan on the object that's being transferred to him by giving mos, the chi chalifin dami. It's as if these mos serve as a kinyan chalifin in such a way that now the lokeach who gave these mos is now kona the object that's being sold to him by the mocher without making a mashicha. And that's a pretty radical chiddush, that you can have mos that serve as a substitute for a kinyan chalipin, and they function in the same way. And why is that so? Because we said that mos should be konos, at least according to Rabbi Yochanan, but the Rabbanan disqualified such a kinyan. But here's a case where the mocher never clarified exactly how much mos he's being paid by the lokeach. Again, he has a certain window of security within a shtus for ona. But this is like a kinyan chalipin, because in a kinyan chalipin, we don't really evaluate the shovi, the market value of the sudar. When with a sudar I'm kona something, there's no quid pro quo, exchange in which we define the nature of the financial market value of the object. Again, we have to go on to the Sefer Rav Huna's statement, in which it says, Rav Huna says, Yeshlo olav ona. It's in this sense, it's paradoxical, but it's not like a kinyan chalipin. Why? D'mechar li bi'eluka amale. Because when the mocher said to the lokeach, give me the mos and I'll sell this to you, he used the word mechira, and mechira is always subject to the laws of ona. So it's not a lashon of chalipin. Had he said to him, take this as chalipin, that would be a different story. But he used the word mechira, which indicates that he wants to have rights. He reserves for himself the rights to claim, I was underpaid, I was cheated. And now the Gemara quotes Rabbi Abba, who wants to argue with the way Rabba had presented Rav Huna as far as Ona is concerned. Rabbi Abba Omar, Rav Huna, according to Rabbi Abba's tradition, in the name of Rav Huna, Mechar li bi'elu kana v'ein lo olav ona. The kinyan here of Mocharli Bielu, where the Mocher doesn't have any idea how many Mos he's receiving, completely circumvents the law of Onah. And whatever the Mocher received, that's what he received, and the kinyan is clinched by the Lokeach on the object that's being transferred to the Lokeach, and the Mocher has no recourse to claim Onah, that the monies that he got from Shimon, from the Lokeach, were less than the value of the object that he sold. Even though he did say Mecharli Be'elu, but his actions speak louder than his words. And he received these mos, and he set up a quasi kinyan chalipin, and therefore there's no recourse to claim Onah. So again, in a situation where the mocher is not makbid on the schum, the value of the mos that he received, that's a kinyan mos as a kinyan chalipin. And now the Gemara wants to know what would be the law in the exact opposite situation. Let's reverse, turn it around. In a case of chalipin, where the mocher is makbid on the value, on receiving the value of his object that he's transferring over to Lokeach. The Gemara says, Pshita. We understand very well, as Rav Huna explained it, that Domim, that when Lokeach pays Domim for the Chafetz, V'yei Makbidalim, the Mocher couldn't care less how much Domim he's receiving, Ha'kamrinon Dekani Dechalif Kechalifin Domu. Rav Huna has established that the Lokeach now has successfully acquired ownership on the object because of the mos that he gave to the mocher as chalifin. But b'makpid aleya mai, the Gemara wants to know what's the din in a case where the object that's being transferred, and of course every object has a definite value, the makne is demanding that he get paid the exact value, the market value of that object. My, what's the din? Do we say that if there's a meshicha on the part of one of these two members of this transaction, the other member of the transaction is kone the other object automatically without a meshicha, and that's the way kinyan chalipin works? Or do we want to say that since in this case, well, the mocher, we'll call it, is makbid, he wants to be guaranteed that he's receiving an object that's worth the value of his object, that's not called a kinyan chalipin, that's more or less a kinyan mos, and a kinyan mos requires meshicha. So again, when does Rav Huna, according to this tzad, set up and recognize the object as a kinyan chalipin, not the object, I'm saying the mos, as effectuating a kinyan chalipin? That's only in a case where the mocher is not makpid on how many mos there are. But if the mocher is makpid, then in a case of chalipin, let's say you give me your shor and I'll give you my para, and the bala shor wants to know that the para is worth exactly X, you know, which is the value of the shor. Here, Rav Huna would have to agree that we're really not talking about a classical chalipin, whereas in a classical chalipin, let's say Ruvain makes a maisa kinyan on a sudar, on a kerchief, and he's not makbid about the value of the kerchief that he's receiving in exchange for his shor or whatever he's selling. But here in this case, where Ruvain is particular, he's makbid, he's careful to make sure that the object he's receiving is worth X, is worth the value of the object that he's transferring, that he's giving over. Therefore, this is a mechira and it's not chalipin. And if it's a case of mechira, in which, in effect, Ruvain is selling his shor to Shimon, then that mechir is not binding until Shimon makes an actual kinyan meshicha on the shor of Ruvain. It's not like the case of Chalipin, where the Chalipin circumvents the need for a Kinyan Mashiach on the object that's being transferred. So the Gemara says that maybe we could be poshed, we can determine the Safek by learning a Braisa. Omer Av Ado Bar Ava Toshma. We have a Braisa that says, Harisha Hoya Tofes Paroso Viomid. A person is holding on to his cow in the middle of the marketplace. Ubach Haver Viomolo Parosho Lomali. Loma, why have you brought this para to the shuk? And the owner of the para responds, L'chamor ani tzarech. I brought it in order to make an exchange. I'm going to give up my para for the sake of acquiring a chamor. That's what I need. I need a chamor. And now his friend responds, Yesh li chamor shani nosein l'cha, parascha b'kama. He says, I'm willing to give you a chamor, but how much do you want for your para? And Bekach v'kach, the owner of the parah says X, he mentions a sum of money, and he asks the owner of the chamor, chamor chabakama, at what price are you willing to sell your chamor? And he answers bekach bekach, and we're not sure in this bekach bekach if he's saying that the chamor is worth the exact same amount as the parah, or the chamor is worth more than the parah. So the price says moshach bala chamor sa parah. If the Bala Chamor, who's now very eager to purchase this para, makes a Mashiach on the para in order to own it, in order to acquire ownership, Vlo Hisvik Bala Para Limshoch Es HaChamor, but the owner of the para has not yet made a Mashiach on the Chamor, Ad Shemes HaChamor, and the Chamor dies, Lo Kana Bala Chamor Es HaPara, the Kinyan is not valid, because the owner of the chamor, the owner of the chamor, even though he had made a mashicha on the para, but nevertheless he didn't acquire the para, because that acquisition of the para is only effective if and when the bala para makes a mashicha on the chamor. So this deal has not been clinched, and therefore the owner of the chamor takes the loss of his chamor. He can't say, well, you, Mr. Paro, Mr. Makna, Paro, Mokhar, Paro, acquired ownership on my chamor. Shmam, you know, we see from this that Chalipinu Makna Be'aleim Lokana, that Rav Huna would have to agree that in this case, since they discussed the price and the Mokhar clearly indicates that he wants a certain price, then it's a Mechira. And a Mechira Metaltan requires a Mashicha. And in this case, they made a kind of a Kinyan Chalipin, but I'm going to read to you, he says, Hare Kan Asu Kinyan Chalipin, but yet, Lo Hispik Limshach Es HaChamor, the owner of the parah did not yet make a Kinyan on the Chamor, Lo Kana. Why? Because since he, the owner of the para, was makbe to get a certain shovi of damim, then the chamor is not given to him. He doesn't automatically acquire the chamor by virtue of the kinyan chalipin that he was makbe his para to the bala chamor, but rather the kinyan that's effective is a kinyan mechira of mos. And in the case of metaltel, there's no kinyan mos until Mashicha. The Bala Par did not make a Kinyan Mashicha on the Chamor, and therefore the entire deal is off, meaning the Bala Chamor didn't make a Kinyan on the Para, the Bala Par didn't make a Kinyan on the Chamor, and that's because the Par is being given here as Damim for the Chamor, and in a case of Kinyan Damim, in this case, the Bala Par would have to make a Kinyan Mashicha on the Chamor in order to clinch the deal. And the Gemara now is going to quote Rava, who wants to come to the opposite conclusion and reject the Braisa. Amar Rava, Atu Chalifin B'Shuftin Askin. What about the classical case of Chalifin? Is Chalifin effectuated by by a person, let's say the mocher is a shota, he's stupid, the lokapti, he couldn't care less, he receives a kerchief which is virtually valueless, and he's going to be mocked in the, you know, the Empire State Building that's worth millions. I mean, how can we understand that Kinyan Chalipin works without kpeda with people who are empty headed? It doesn't make sense. Elakol Chalipin Mikpin Kapti Vikana. That in every case of a Kinyan Chalipin, the mocher wants to make sure that what he receives as Chalipin has the value. And therefore, here too, there's no suffix, as you want to say, that since he's Makbid, you want to claim that since he's Makbid the mocher on the Shovit, he makes wants to make sure that he gets his value back, the value of the Parah, he wants to get a return, that therefore it's not valid as a Kenyan Chalipin, and it becomes a Kenyan Dovim that requires Mashicha. But rather, the Brisa that you quote is Hachamai Askina, what's the case? The Omar Le, what was the verbal agreement in this Brisa? Let's make a swap of Chamor Bipara Utle. You know what? The Bala Chamor says, your Parah is not worth as much as my Chamor. I demand that you throw into the deal a tleh, so it's going to be a cow and a lamb for a chamor, for a donkey. Umashach es haparah. Now the Bala Chamor, after this agreement was made, he made a mashiach on the parah, but nevertheless, adayin lo mashach es hatleh. He hasn't gotten around to make a mashiach on the tleh. To lo havile mashiach mi'alya. This is not a perfect mashiach, as long as he hasn't been moshach everything. And therefore, he's not kone with this mashiach of the chalipin. That's the case in the Braisa. The Gemara now comes back once again to Rav Huna to clarify that there's something in the language of Rav Huna that shouldn't be misunderstood, shouldn't be understood superficially. That there was a kinyan with Mos as chalipin Omar Mar. When Rav Huna, as we quoted earlier, says that somebody has Mos in his hands and the mocher doesn't know how much Mos he's receiving. Mechar li the elu, and the lokaf says to the mocher, you know what, sell me this particular object that you have with these Mos, and the mocher agrees and receives these Mos without knowing how many there are. Kanaf. So again, according to Rav Huna, the mocher received this payment without knowing how much money he's getting, and he didn't ask. And Rav Huna says, "Kana v'yesh lo lavona." In this case, the kinyan is effectuated on the schefetz, the very moment that the lokeh pays the most to the mocher, and the mocher can claim ona if he was underpaid. Is lema? Shall we say sover Rav Huna matbea nasa chalipin? Are we assuming that according to Rav Huna, the matbea that's given over to the mocher is given as chalipin, and that's how we can circumvent the need for a kinyan mashicha, and the lokeach is kona this object that's being offered to him, transferred to him by the mocher without making mashicha on it, by virtue of the most that he paid as that he gave as chalipin, not as payment, but as chalipin? Lo, the Gemara says no. When you analyze Rav Huna, you don't have to assume that Rav Huna had in mind that this kinyan should be effectuated with chalipin. It's like chalipin, but it's a kinyan kesef. The reason why the mashicha is unnecessary here is for a different reason. And that is that here's a case of a kinyan mos that doesn't require mashicha. How could that be? And the answer is, Rav Huna sover like Rav Yochanan, Ti Omar Dvar Torah Mos Konos, Mifnei Ma Omru, Mashicha Kona. Why did the Chachamim exclude Mashicha? Well, exclude Mos, which the Torah validated and recognized? Gzeresh Hami Omru, Nisrafu Chitecha Ba'aliya, Is Milsa Shchicha Gazur Ve'Rabban, Milsa Shchicha Lo Gazur Ve'Rabban. And as we've seen in the past, this Takonis Chachamim to be Mafkia, a valid kinyan ben Torah of Mos, only was instituted and established in the case of Milsa the Shchicha. But here we have a very unusual case where do you find a mocher receiving mos that he's not makbid on the amount of mos that he gets? Is lo gozru beirabanan. And therefore the kinyan is effectuated through mos, and there's no need for a kinyan meshicha on the object. This is very similar to chalipin, but it's a kinyan domin. Amale marhuna bereid Rav Nachman Rav Ashi atun hachi mas nisula. You derive this from the words of Rav Huna after you had a suffek, does he hold him at Beis Nasa Chalipin or not? And you rejected that and said there's no proof for Rav Huna that Matbea, that he maintains he holds that Matbea Nasa Chalipin. Anan Hochi Masin, we had it explicitly in the transmission of the Torah of Rav Huna, V'cheinom Rav Huna Ein Matbea Nasa Chalipin, that he was listed amongst that whole who's list of Amoraim that we had back on the Memvav that maintained that Ein Matbea Nasa Chalipin. So you don't have to be medayikit, you don't have to vacillate back and forth. We heard it, we received that tradition explicitly. Now the Gemara goes on to discuss exactly how Chalipin operates. Who gives the Suda to whom? Bame Konim is Rav Amar B'Kalev Shel Kone, and skipping for a minute, Levi Amar B'Kalev Shel Makne. We have Machlokas here. Whose Kli, you know, V'Sholef Ish Nalo Olav in the paradigm, you know, case in Rus of Kenyan Chalipin, whose Sudar is being given to whom? Whose utensils being given to whom? Rav is of the opinion that it's the Kone, which is, in a sense, intuitively logical, because the Kone is giving to the Mocher a Sudar, and he's receiving, at the very moment the Mocher makes a Mashiach on this Sudar, on this Kli, automatically the Mocher is Makne something in return to the Kone. So it makes sense that the Kone gives the Kli to the Makne, and in return he gets the object that's being transferred. And the Gemara embellishes this, the Nichole Lekone Dilehevi Makne Kone. And now there's a Das Makne here, that the Makne wants to transfer ownership of the object. Ki hechi deligmar velikni le. Everyone's happy here, according to Rav. The Lokeach, the Kone, is happy because he's giving over something, a Suda, to the Machne, and in return, he's going to get ownership over the object that the Machne, the Mocher, is giving him, and the Mocher is receiving that object. That's called Kelov Shel Kone. The Levi Omer B'Kelov Shel Machne. The Machne is giving a Suda over to Lokeach, and together with that, Sudar, he's also giving the object. He's giving like two things simultaneously. And the Gemara is going to explain this very shortly, why it works that way, and why Levi insists that it's the Kalev Shel Makne. And this Kalev Shel Makne, I believe, indicates or demonstrates Rabbi Chaim Brisker's understanding of the way Kinyan Chalipin works. It's a symbolic Kinyan. It's a Kinyan that just demonstrates, or like a foghorn, it declares the Das Makne of the Mocher. Because again, it's not a classical Kinyan Dom and a Kinyan Mos, in which the Mocher is getting paid for his object. He's giving, he's not taking. He's not on the receiving end, he's on the giving end. But that's the way he clinches and objectifies his Das Makne, which makes Kinyan Chalipin not only unique, but very powerful. And we've seen that Kinyan Chalipin operates where other Kinyanim would not. You know, both, it operates, it's effective for both Karka Metaltalin, it works on even Shibudim. And this is all based on the concept of Das Makne, which is now objectively demonstrated and clinched by the giving of a Kli from the Makne over to the Kona. And it could be that in the case of Ksuba, the Makne is the Baal, and the Baal really should, according to the Sheet of Levi, should be giving a Kli in order to be maknas yibudim to the isha, that she now has rights to collect from the baal, and she could in event of a get or the death of her husband collects the masayim zuzva ksubas psula. She now is acquiring something. The baal is the makna, and therefore according to Levi should be Caleb shel makna. The Gemara now asks a kash on Levi. Omalei Rav Huna raises the following question. Now, where does Rav Huna come from? This, I don't know if this is the same Rav Huna we're always familiar with, because it says Midiskrata, I don't know, a place from called Diskrata, Lerava. And he says to Rava, Lelevi Diomer Caleb shall makne. And now this Rav Huna, you will soon see, misunderstood how, you know, the mechanics of Levi. He didn't understand the way we understood it, that the act of being makne the Keli is a symbolic act that demonstrates and objectifies his das makne, but rather he understood that it operates with a kind of a kinyan agav situation. And what's happening is, let's say the mocher is selling a piece of real estate, so he gives a kerchief over to the lokeach, and when the lokeach receives that kerchief, he becomes the proud owner of this major piece of real estate. Now that's a strange kind of agav. So the Gemara asks, Hokakoni ara agav glima? How can it be that the lokech is now acquiring ownership over the karka agav, a piece of a garment of a metaltalin? In Kain Havale, this is the exact opposite of what the Mishnah establishes in Kiddushin Daf Chavav as the modem operandus of the kinyan of agav. It now becomes nechosim sheyesh lehem achrayis, niknim im nechosim she'en lehem achrayis. Now, nechosim sheyesh lehem achrayis is karka, and so far as karka is always the basis for shibudim. There are no shibudim that a malvik acquires in the nechosim the lov. If those nechosim are nechosim she'en lehem achrayis, meaning metaltalin. So now you're telling me that nechosim sheyesh lehem achrayis, the karkos, become, so to speak, tofel, they become secondary, and they're schlepped along with the kinyan that's made on the chosim shein lemachrais, on the sudar, on the kli that's being given by the mochet to lokeach, anan ibcha tanan. The Mishnah says just the exact reverse, that the chosim shein lemachrais, that you could be makna metaltalin, agav karaka, nicknim ibn the chosim shein lemachrais. And now you're switching it around. You're telling him the mocher is giving a suda that's worth a dime over to lokeach, and lokeach now acquires ownership over a piece of property that's worth millions through agav amalei. So Rava says to Rav Huna, "Ihavi Levi Hoch." If Levi was here, he'd be very upset about your question, your accusation. Havi mapikli apoch pulse denura. You know, he would flash at you, sparks of fire. Maybe he would put you into nidu, according to one interpretation. Why? Because you were choshing him to say the exact opposite of what it says in the Mishnah. Mi savres glima maknale. You think that he's being makna, the mocher is being makna, the karka agav, the glima. Certainly Levi understands that that's not so. Levi holds that there's a Kinyan Chalipin over here. This is not a Kinyan Agav. And the Kinyan Chalipin is effectuated because Nechshav HaMocha Kibul Kibul Dover Mehakone. That it's as if the again, I don't know if we have to go into the psychology here, but it's as if this is this is giving us the mechanics of Caleb Shel Mocher, according to Levi, of Kinyan Chalip, and it's as if the Mocher is absolutely thrilled that Lokeach received whatever he received. In other words, the kerchief was received by the Lokeach. So if you send something, a gift, let me give an extreme case, to Donald Trump, and he received that gift happily, that you feel excited about. So here the mocher is excited that the lokech received this sudar, and by he hana, with the hana that the mocher receives, that he's so excited, the kakabul minay, that the kona was machshiv him, and he received the gift, instead of saving it back, is that itself, with that hana, he, the mocher, is machne the karka, gomer machne le. So it's not a kinyan agav, because that wouldn't work, but it's a kinyan based on a hana that's received, which, again, as we said before, is simply another way of saying that the machne, the mocher, has absolute ironclad das machne. Of course, the classical case of a hana by virtue of the fact that so-and-so, that Yenem received my gift and didn't send it back, is the Gemara in Kiddushin, where a woman gives, paradoxically, she gave the kesef to the husband, and that effectuates Kiddushin. The Gemara says that she's machna herself with the hana that she received, that he received her gift. But the Gemara stipulates that that's only with an onam chashuv. You know, the fact that somebody, a rank and file citizen, accepts my gift, that doesn't give me any great joy. But if an Adam Chashuv, you know, he's Donald Trump and he receives my gift, that becomes something that I'm excited about. And the question is here, the Gemara says that you don't need an Adam Chashuv. We're not making that stipulation and that condition for Chalipa according to Levi. So the Ramban says that in Kiddushin you need a Shava Pruta. Less than a Shava Pruta cannot effectuate a Kiddushin, and it's to say that she got such a hanoah by virtue of the fact that he, the Mekadesh, received her gift, and that's worth a Shava Pruta, is worth hanoah, and for that you need an Onam Chashuv. But in the case of Chalipin, where you can be Kona even less than a Shava Pruta, as we'll soon learn, therefore the hanoah of any person who receives the gift is a barest minimum, base minimum hanoah, which maybe pokes me Shava Pruta, but that's enough for Chalipin. The Ritva offers another answer. He says that when the Gemara says that according to Levi, there's a hana which the mocher, the machner, receives by virtue of the fact that the kona accepted his gift, that's not the real reason of Levi. The real reason of Levi is because the Torah itself, in the parsha of Vishalaf Ish Nalo V'Nosan L'Riyehu, the parsha in Rus of Rav Chalipin, is talking about Kelev Shel Machner, which we'll soon see. So the Ritva sees it in terms of the mechanics in the paradigm case of Chalipin. Okay, where are we up to? Let's go on. The Gemara says, Kitanoi, that shall we assume that the Machlokas Rav and Levi is really in effect a Machlokas Tanoi? And it all depends on how to interpret the paradigm case of Chalipin in Rus. V'zos lifnim b'Yisrael ala ge'ula v'ala tmura l'kayim kol dovar sholaf ish nalo v'nosan lire'ehu ge'ula zo mechira. Okay, so we'll see exactly what this means in just a second. This pasuk, which mentions both Geula and Tmura, is the source for Kinyan Chalipin Dvar Torah. That's the Ramban's Shita. Usually we learned a Din Torah from Chumash, but in this case, we learn it from Boaz. But it's really Divrei Kabbalah, and Divrei Kabbalah, says the Ramban, in Sefer Mitzvah Shor Sheni, is Divrei Torah. It has the same status as Dvar Torah. And there are a bunch of achronim, starting from the Mabit and on, that hold that Kinyan Chalipin is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. And the Navi who wrote Megillas Rus, he was Masmich Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai to the Mikra. However, the Radbaz in his Tshuvas is of the opinion that Kinyan Chalipin is only Darabonah, by virtue of the fact that it was only derived from Divrei Kabbalah and not from Divrei Torah. The Dvar Avram, who lived about a half a century ago in Kovna, he claims that the Yerushalmi in Kiddushin seems to indicate that Kinyan Chalipin is a minah. And that's what the pasuk means when it says v'zof zos lefnim mi yisra. But be that as it may, whatever definition you have and however you classify Kinyan Chalipin, whether it's Doraisa, whether it's midivrei Kabbalah, loch lemosh mi Sinai, whether it's a drabbana that they were masbech on the kra, as the Radbaz would have it, or maybe according to the Dvar Avram, it's only a minog. But what does the Torah mean by dividing? What does the Tanakh, I should say, mean by dividing up Kinyan Chalipin into these two parts, Geula and Tmura? And the answer is that there are two, essentially two forms or categories of Kinyan Chalipin. One, which is called Geula, is Mechira, which means that Reuven wants to sell something and he wants to transfer ownership to Shimon on that object that he's selling, but Shimon hasn't yet paid up the mos, and the kinyan is going to be effectuated by Chalifin as a kinyan mechira without the kone giving the mos yet. In other words, usually we understand, we envision a mechira that I want to buy something for you, I pay you for it, here's the money, I put it on the table. That can be circumvented through geula, through this mechira of a kinyan chalipin. Through the kinyan chalipin, I, as a buyer, purchase and acquire ownership on your object that you're selling me, even without paying you its mos. Where do we see in the Torah that geula is a reference to mechira v'chein hu omer? So we found in the pasuk at the end of Ayikra, I'll read the entire pasuk, it says, lo yevaker bein tov l'rav lo yemirenu v'im hamer yemirenu v'ayahu t'murasi yakodesh lo yigael. That in the case of what's called t'mura, a person was meimir behemes kodshim behemes chulin, and he tried to effectuate a change, a swap for chulin to exchange, to replace kodshim. And in such a case, the Torah wants to say that the tmura animal, which is the chulin, can never be redeemed. There's no pigeon on it, and the Torah calls it lo yigael. So geula refers to pedia, and pedia is a kind of mechira. What does the word tmura mean? Zo chalifin. Chalifin is a more classical understanding of a kinyan chalifin, where two things are being exchanged in a barter deal. That's called machlif para b'chamar, machlif kli for another chefetz. And that's going to be tmura. Where do we see tmura? V'chein hu omer. Also in Vayikra, in the same context, it says lo yachlifenu v'lo yamir oso. And then it says l'kayim kol davar sholof ishnalo. Going back to the pasuk in Rus, v'nasan lireehu mi nasan lemi. And here we have the machlokes, whether it's kelev shel kona, kelev shel makne. According to the first opinion here, it's Boaz. Boaz nasan legoel. Boaz is the kona. He's going to take over the sadeh of the family sadeh that's now owned by the Ploni Almoni. Rav Yehudomer, goel nasan leboaz. It was the goel, that Ploni Almoni, who's being machna the sadeh. He's the one who took off his shoe and gave it to Boaz. So we see that the Tanakama here is Rav, and the second Tana is Levi. And that second Tana is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, Goel Nosan Leboaz Esana, which means Caleb Shel Machna, that's Levi. So Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, reflects the sheet of Levi, Caleb Shel Machna, whereas the Tanakama here in this price reflects the sheet of Rav, of Caleb Shel Kone, and that's Boaz, Nosan Lego. Boaz the Kone gave the Goel his Naal. And therefore, the Kinyan was effectuated, and therefore we see that the Machlokas Rav and Levi, is indeed a Machlokas Tanoim, as codified in this Braisa. Tana, we learned that a Braisa Konim Bekli Afal Pisha Einbo Shava Pruta, a kli can be effective as a kinyan suda, to effectuate a kinyan suda, even though the kli is not worth a pruta. And once again, that seems to indicate that we're not talking with about some sort of an exchange and a barter. I mean, after all, the kli doesn't have a value on the market, but we're talking about some sort of symbolic act that demonstrates the das machne. Rav Nachman says that you cannot effectuate a kinyan chalipin with a kli. Only with a kli you can effectuate a kinyan chalipin, but not with peri. And Rav Sheshes Amar afilu beperos. Rav Sheshes understood that we don't have to take nal in the most limited sort of way, the way Rav Nachman understood it. Nal is a kli. But even peros, there's a machlokas achronim, according to Rav Sheshes, what would he say about a pri that's not worth a pruta? After all, the original brisa says konim bekli afal pishein bo shava pruta, and kli seems to be exclusively a kli. A kli has inherent value. This is another Behuda shita that doesn't necessarily reflect itself in the market value. You know, if you're in need of a needle to sew up your garment, it could be by five needles for a penny. It's less than a shava pruta. It doesn't matter. The kli itself gives chashivus. There's a sheet of the Rashba Masechta Shvuos that you can take a shvu on a kli even if it's less than a shava pruta. And maybe you can even be Makadish and Isha with a kli less than a shava pruta. I am Kedushin Reish Paragalf. But in the case of Peri, that has to have an inherent value, which means it's got to have the value of a pruta, and that's the sheet of the Noda Behuda. However, the Ram Shif is quoted here in the footnote as saying that according to Rav Sheshes, the same definition of kli, as far as chalipin that applies to kli, applies to peri. And when you read this brisa that says konim kli af pishein bo shav pruta, don't take it in the limited sense that's referring to a kli and dafka kli. And that's certainly the way Rav Nachman would have understood. But according to Rav Sheshes, it means a peri. And again, it's a symbolic act that clinches the das, and therefore all we need is a peri. It doesn't matter what the peri's worth, that's the Maram Shif. The Gemara says, my time in the Rav Nachman, why does Rav Nachman insist that only a kli can effectuate a chalipin and not a peri? The Amakra, na'alo. The Pasuk says, na'alo in Rusa. That's the paradigm for chalipin. Na'al, and anything that's domil and al in, be the achrini lo. So now represents this category called the kli. It has a function, a utensil, but not anything else, which means the exclusion of peri. My time in the Rav Sheshes of Makra, l'kayim kol davar, the very same pasuk where it mentions nal in Rus in the parasha of Chalif, and it says l'kayim kol davar. The extra kol davar is coming to expand and include peros. Rav Nachman Nami Haksiv L'Kayim Kol Davar. So what's Rav Nachman going to say about the pasuk L'Kayim Kol Davar? Seems to be a ribui, and that would indicate even peros. Hahu L'Kayim Kol Davar the Niknin B'Minal. That this wants to tell us that through a na'al, through a kli, you can be kona, you can effectuate a kinyan chalipin b'chol davar, which means you can effectuate both a geula and a tmura. We said the geula is mechira, and Tmur is a kinyan of machlif, shava b'shava. Both of them can be effectuated by a minal. Otherwise, you could have interpreted that maybe the pasuk is referring to one of these two, to effectuate a kind of mechira, or alternatively, a swap, or an exchange. Maram Shif has a different twist on what's being derived from L'Kayim Kol Davar according to Rav Nachman. And he says, what does it mean, L'Kayim Kol Davar the Niknin V'Minal, that you can acquire anything through a Kinyan Chalipin? It could be Kalev, it could be Peri, it could be Karka. In other words, nothing is excluded from being subject to and affected by the Kinyan Chalipin. Although again, the Gemara has an exclusion in the case of Matbea, which makes this pshat of the Maram Shif a little bit odd, because the Kol Davar sounds like anything can be to be subject to a kinyan chalipim. Now the Gemara wants to know, Rav Sheshes Nami Haksiv Na'alo. So why does the Tanakh mention a kli when, you know, it sort of confuses us, because according to Rav Sheshes, it's lav dafka kli, and even peri can effectuate chalipin. Amalcha Rav Sheshes Ma Na'alo Dover Mesuyam Af Kol Dover Mesuyam. We need an entire complete object in order to function and serve in the capacity of a kinyan chalipin. That's called davar mesuyam. But chatzi rimon or chatzi egos, the low. If you have half of a fruit, it's not a complete fruit, then that cannot be, call it a oses chalipin, or an instrument of chalipin. Because Rav Sheshes understands that the Torah specifies a shoe, because you can see a shoe as a davar sholem, as a davar mesuyam. And although the kaim called davar includes even something that's a fruit, but nevertheless, like a kli, it's got to be whole, it's got to be complete. Amar Rav Sheshes braid Rav Idi keman kasvinen ha'idna. The Nusach of Shtaros, which was standardized and uniform, whenever a Shtar was made to testify about a Kenyan Sudar, like for example, we'll see it in a Ksuba, it says, B'mana de Kashal Mikne Be. Now the word mana means a kli, and it's got to be a kli that we can use for Chalip. That reflects the Shita of Rav Nachman. Is Lafuke min Rav Sheshes? This would seem to reject the Shita of Rav Sheshes, the Avakonim Biperos. So therefore, why mention mana when it's not limited to a mana to kosher? It's all peros are effective and suitable for Kinyan Sudar. So in a certain sense, what the Gemara is establishing, that our minhag in writing in Shtaros, quote, b'mana d'kosher l'mikne bei, every word here is coming to l'chumra to exclude any possible question that could possibly arise, some objection that you know what, this doesn't fit into a certain shita. We're going to cover our basis. Number one, we're going to cover our basis, b'mana, it's going to be a kli, and you know, everybody agrees that a kli is effective for a chalipin. We're not going to get into the machlokas here and questions. Now somebody's going to object and say, well, this kinyan was effectuated by a peri, and, you know, it reflects the sheet of Rav Sheshes, but we want to be machmir, we want to accept the sheet of Levi. And then it says the kosher, you know, not every kli can operate, can function as an instrument for a chalipin. Lafuke min Shmuel, that don't think we're maintaining Shmuel's kula. The Omer who says, and here we're turning to Mem Zayin Beis, the Konim be Meroka, even a kli that's made out of manure can also operate, can also function effectively as a kinyan chalipin. But no, we're gonna demand, and we're gonna testify that it was a kli that's kosher. Limikne Bay. Just 1 second, I lost the place here. Oh, here it is. Now, as far as this kli, which is called a Maroka, is concerned, this is a utensil that is repulsive, and therefore cannot be used as an instrument of Chalifin, or perhaps it has really no significance whatsoever. We say that a kli can be even pachas b'shav pruta, but it has certain significance. This is almost like rubbish. It's hard to use such a kli. I mean, you would never want to cook up something in such a kli because it's made of dung. And in order for something to be fit for a chalipa, we don't accept the opinion of Shmuel. We need something that's similar to a nal. And don't think that this, you know, when we write the shtar, don't think that this shtar is testifying to a questionable chalipin. It's absolutely kosher according to everybody. This kli is a perfectly good kli, you know, it's a handkerchief, it's a yarmulke, it's a pen or a pencil, whatever it might be. And then we say lemikne, and that extra word is lafuki, means the levi, the armor of a caleb shall makne, kamashu the mikne velo leknuye. It's the kli, not of the lokeach, of the kone, but rather the kli of the makne. It's possible that we paskibikra din like Levi, that you can use Caleb shell kone, right? But just one second. I think I mentioned Levi when I meant to say Rav. Right? Rav is the one who says Caleb shell kone. Rav is the one who says Caleb shall kone, and now we're coming Lafuki Levi, who says Caleb shall makne. I don't know if I got that right, so I apologize if I didn't. Kamash Malon, the language of the Shtar says lemikne velo leknuye. In other words, the word lemikne would indicate the action of transferring, which would sound like the Caleb shall makne, and that would. If that was the language of the shtar, it would indicate the shita of Levi, who says Caleb shall makne, but instead it doesn't say lemikne, it says liknuye. Correct? Let's read the language once again. Vimona de kosher. Ah, it says lemikne be. What is lemikne be? But we got to get this straight. Let's get this straight. Sorry, I apologize. I was sort of influenced by the grammar of Hebrew, and I thought lemikne means lahaknos, but rather lemikne in Aramaic means to acquire. That's what lemikne means, right? Lemikne be, and that's coming lafuke Levi, who says Caleb shall makne, because then it would be likanuye, or laknuye. Laknuye means to transfer. But we say lemikne means to acquire, not to transfer. And therefore, this is reflecting of the shita of Rav, because Rav is of the opinion, as we said before, Caleb shall kone, and that's called lemikne, to acquire. Now it says bay. Why do we add the word bay? With it, is Rav Papa is going to have one interpretation, that's lemute matbea, that we're coming to exclude that sheet who holds that you can use a matbea as a kinyan, as a method instrument of kinyan chalipin. Rav Zvidvi Temer Rav Ashi Omar Limute Isure Hano. This means that you cannot be makne, you cannot use, for example, a sudar of ira nidachas, which is also hano, to effectuate a kinyan chalipin. I'm not sure why we're excluding Isure Hano. Is it sort of like that case of Morocco, which means it's lacking in chashivus, or maybe it's not roi l'malacha, and here too, if it's ira nidachas, it's not roi l'malacha, or maybe the reason we're excluding Isuri Anah is because it's Isuri Anah mufka from mamon, you have to give mamon, again, even if something is not a shavim pruta, it still has a general shame mamon to it, but it's got to be something that has some value, even if it's less than a Shom Pruta, and Isuri Anah has no value whatsoever. For Ikar D'Amri, we have another Lishna, that Bey, Omer Avpapa Lemute Matbea, that the word Bey is not coming for anything, right, so that's Rav Papa actually. So what's the difference between the first Lishna and the second Lishna? Rav Papa said Lim'ute Matbea in the first Lishna, correct? And in the Ika D'Amri, Be Omer Rav Papa Lim'ute Matbea. O D'Kosher Omer Rav Zvidi Tem Rav Ashi Lim'ute Isuri Hanoa. That the word D'Kosher is coming to exclude Isuri Hanoa of Yerani Dachs, not Morocco. Ava Morika, or Morocco, is low itzrich, that's so posh that it cannot be used as an instrument of kinyan chalipin, and it's not even It's not even mentioned here. We don't even have to bother dealing with it. So here we are at Daf Mem Zayin of Beis. We'll end the shiur now, and in Mirtz Hashem we'll try to finish Mem Zayin of Beis and go on to Mem Ches Amud Aleph in the next shiur. Thank you very much.